Thank you. And I just want to say that I'm very thankful for being asked to share in this space. It has been very powerful, and I'm feeling a lot, and a lot has come up for me. When I came to ACA, I was at bottom, and I had just went through a bottom with the passing of my mother, and I was frozen, and I didn't know what to do with that. I had had many bottoms, but with her passing, because of who she was a very powerful woman, very raging, very abusive. And it was a lot of it growing up. And in our family, I just being the youngest of 11, I just thought that's how Black people was raised. I thought that that's what we went through. That's how, that's how they deal with their children. But from this meeting today, I realized that I am not alone. I am not alone. And like I said, I was the youngest of 11, and I don't even know where to start because so much has come up for me today. But I've seen a lot of abuse, neglect play out in my life, and I have siblings that are 20 plus years older than me, and I have nieces and nephews older than me or same age as me. And I say that because all of them was my authority figure. It just wasn't my parents. My parents, my mother, when she was pregnant with me, was in so much denial that she didn't even tell my father that she was pregnant or my siblings. They found out the day I was born, and she didn't even name me, because I know now what I know is she was suffering from postpartum, because by then Black mothers, they wasn't viewed as human anyway, nor was their children. So I know she has had to be suffering from postpartum four or five times over, because it was a lot of us. She never left the house. My aunties never left the house. So I'm now realizing how generational this is. And what I know about her and her family and her upbringing was only one thing that I learned about her father was that he was a moonshiner, and he was constantly crawling home drunk. And that was her everyday reality. So yes, I can understand her rage. I can understand her hurt. And that was her. And that was her upbringing. With my father, he was always disconnected. He was always absent. He was there in body, but everything else was gone. It seemed like his spirit was gone. And when I found out what happened to him, he had witnessed his brothers shoot his father in the back while he was asleep. And I know that he carried that, because a lot of days he was just silent. I didn't even know. I didn't even realize. I don't even know realize if he knew what was actually going on in our house while he was there. He worked all the time. He was a roofer. He made no more than he worked seven, till he was 70-something years old. He made no more than $8 an hour. So we was very poor. We didn't celebrate Christmas. We didn't celebrate birthdays. And I don't know if that was because we were poor or just because that they was unable to, they was unable to relate to those things. I was just recently reading a book called Punch Me Up to the Gods. And in this book, this guy was saying, he was talking about his father and how his father would just, his father told him that he was gonna kill, he would kill him first before he let somebody white kill him. And I kind of like related that to my mother because I feel that that's what she was trying to do at sometimes. The obedience was that severe, she would pick up things no matter where she at, she would throw them. I don't care if there was frying pans or whatever. If she was in the kitchen, she didn't care. She would beat us in the tub. She would beat us when we were asleep. That's how she woke us up. It was no compassion. It was no kindness. I don't know that part of my mother. I never known that part of my mother to be kind or compassion. But then I understood after reading this book that people that was raised in the Jim Crow era, how they couldn't show compassion to their children or wouldn't show compassion to their children because it's shown the weakness. It was shown as weakness. And they can be hurt or they can be killed. So that kind of gave me some compassion for my mother. And this is new because this is just happening. Because I, for a long time, I was angry. I was very, really angry with her. And I was really angry with my father, and I was really angry with my siblings, who I don't have much contact with. Most of them, I am in no contact with them because a lot of things that went on in the house and in our home. I do want to share some photos of where I grew up in. And we grew up in an area called the gas plant area. And these tanks were behind our house. And we lived in those little row houses. And coming from the South and being in the South and living in St. Pete, it was the only place that Jews and blacks could live. And out going from the beaches and coming into the city, they had signs that said no Jews, no blacks, and no dogs. So that's what kind of environment that we grew up in. It was an environment of hate. And any other word that you can use for that, I have no words for it. It was just something that we live with every day. But gradually, we, the Jews, were able to move out of this gas plant area, and the area kind of got a little bigger. It kind of got a little bigger. I'm trying to share another picture. And what you see in this picture is basically the memory that I have. Everything was brown. It was nothing. The land was dead. All we had was dirt. And that's what we lived in because it was poison. To this day, I have siblings who are dealing with cancers who have had multiple cancers. And I don't know if it's from growing up in this place or not, but I believe that it has something to do with it. Because those things were right behind our house. And because we couldn't go beyond 5 blocks to the north and 9 blocks to the south, we tried to make our way with it. We tried to do what the best we could do with it, you know, and we learn how to survive. And one way I learned how to survive is running and jumping a train, because we knew if we stayed near these train tracks that we would be safe. Because outside of these train tracks, you don't know if you was gonna come home. So we learned to jump this train. And that's what we would do if we wanted to travel to, it was a place on a north side called a PAL, and that was the place. It was like a rec center. We would go and play there, but we had to catch this train to do it because we had to go through white neighborhoods. But I do want to say, underneath this bridge here, it was a pond, and that's the pond that we used to swim in because we couldn't go to the beaches because we also had to walk through the white neighborhoods. And every time we would walk through the night white neighborhoods, we would get bottles thrown at us. We would get full cans of beer thrown at us. And we was just kids. We used to have to wear full gear to football practice because we would have to walk through white neighborhoods. And they would throw these things at us and they would call us any and everything so that kids shouldn't want to hear. And one of those words showed up in this meeting today. And my dad always say, you never use the N-word. We never call each other boy, because he said that those are white racist words. And I hold that to that. And I teach my children that. Now with that, that is where we live. We couldn't really catch the city bus because we couldn't sit in the green benches. St. Pete's have green benches. They had put green benches where you catch the city bus, and we were black man black couldn't sit on these green benches. So most of the places we would walk to. So we learned to walk, and I learned to run, and I started that to running just to get away. I would just want to run away. So I would run at night because just to get my head together. Because I was being molested from 5 to 15 by one of my brother's friends. He lived behind us in the second row of houses. And he would just come through the back door. And he did this numerous times. And that's when I learned how to leave my body, because I would just allow it to happen without feeling the pain and without feeling the anguish of it. I would leave my body. And that's how I spent most of my adult life, outside of my body. You know, and I came to ACA and I was dealing with all of that, the trauma of my family, my brothers being addicts, seeing my cousin have an overdose in our garage. All of that I had to dig up under from up under. And then here come the racism piece. Not knowing what to do with that, because now I know the why. I know the why my mother was angry. I know the why my father was missing. You know, because his father, my great grandmother, actually, she was a slave. She lived to be 160 years old. And my grandfather was the product of a master-slave relationship. and he could pass for white. And that's why he beat his children, because his children couldn't pass. And so he mistreated them because he was angry with them. And that's why they shot him and they buried him. And I have been looking for his grave. And that's why I started ancestry work, so I can find his grave to let him know that I do forgive him. Because I know that a lot of the stuff that I carry from my parents has been generational. That pain, all of it, I seem to have carried it all my life. I was depressed and didn't know why. As a kid, I was sad all the time and didn't know why, but I knew it wasn't mine. I knew it wasn't mine. It was my parents, and it was my parents' parents. And so I started this process, just digging from up under all of that, just trying to get up on from under, up under that, And ACA has really just saved my life. I didn't know who I was, and I showed up in this program. I was 50 years old, and I had no self. I had no self-esteem. I didn't love myself. I spent most of my life sabotaging myself, trying to destroy myself because I was carrying so much of this. And I didn't know what to do with it. It was too hard to be in my body, too painful to be in my body. So this program has allowed my parts, we was talking, there was one section about loving parent, and it's since I didn't know what a loving parent was, I didn't know where to get reach in and get that, and where would I get that from, and how would I attain that, until my inner kids started showing up, and I started to sit with them and hear what they were saying, because all of the screaming and all the yelling I thought was my mother. I realized it was my kids. It was my inner kids trying to get my attention because they was hurting. They was constantly in pain. And so I started to dissect. I started to meditate with them. I used pictures. I went around to each home that we stayed in, because after we were forced to move out of that gas plant area, because they wanted to put a stadium there. So we was forced to move. And then we ended up homeless. From that, I ended up homeless all through my high school years, living from place to place, because we couldn't stay in a place no longer than a couple of months because my parents couldn't afford it. Because like I said, my dad only made $8. $8 an hour. So we moved from place to place, and I remember just coming home one day, and in the first house we lived in, and all of our furniture was out in the yard. It was just in the yard. And my dad was still at work. And like I say, most of my siblings was addicts, and most of them by that time was gone. And then it was me. Most of the time they would just drop their kids off and they would leave. They wouldn't even wonder how we would eat or if we ate, because my mother had stopped cooking, because like I say, my mother was suffering, and she didn't know, she didn't have, my family didn't have this thing called recovery. There was no recovery language. We didn't have this language. We didn't know how to speak this language. I just walked into this language. This language found me, and I'm so grateful for it, because now I can speak this language, and every day I'm learning. I've learned so much about my life, since in this being in this program. And today somebody's mentioned the word emotional racial sobriety, And I'm gonna tell you why I stayed in ACA. I stayed in ACA because of that word emotional sobriety, because I know that's what I needed, you know, because I knew I could put down the drink, you know, I can put down the drugs. Because when I started having my own kids, my first daughter, I realized that's what I did because I needed to be there for her because I didn't want her to have the same experiences that I did. But what did may happen is actually she really did have some of the same experience because I started picking up those things again just to get through the day, you know. And yeah, so I am here. Because of all of that, all of the traumas, everything that I've witnessed, all of the racism, and I'm listening to other people's shares, and I'm like, wow, I'm not alone, you know, I'm not alone. I remember being in the classroom, and you know, like in the other classroom, they do the pledge, and I don't make my kids stand up. I don't make them do it. So the other teacher came into my room, and he tried to force my kids to stand up. So what I told him, I didn't interrupt. I just let him do what he had to do. But I did say, well, can we meet tomorrow? Because I need to talk with you. So we met tomorrow. We met that morning before the kids got there. And I told him some of the stories that I've grew up with about walking through white neighborhoods and being, you know, and bottles being thrown at me by people with sicking dogs on me. And I told him, I cannot stand for a pledge. I cannot pledge allegiance to a country that does not love me, that never loved me because I was black. I don't like using the word black because that's another word my daddy put out. And I'm still trying to find this identity, you know, where I belong, who I am. And I know I am going to find it. I know I am going to find it one day. You know, because when you grow up in a community like that, it's just, you don't know who you are. You don't know why people hate you. Here, where we live, we was they also didn't do integration well. And I remember going to an all-black school in this community, and then we was told the next following year that we had to go to a white school. And this is my first experience with white people. In the town that they were sending us to, we knew it was for the Klansmen. Because the Klansmen was all around, but this is where they stayed. They live mostly. So we had to go to a school that's in Klans country. And the day we got off the bus, the cars, the people, everybody was out the doors, and everybody just looked at us like we was aliens. I don't remember much about school. Because in that school, I wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom. I remember pooping on myself and just happened to sit in it. My parents were so disconnected. They never asked to see a report card. They didn't ask how your day was. They didn't ask because they never went to school, basically. I think my mom must have, or and my dad must have went to second grade at that because they had to work. So education was not a thing. And we was just given to the hands of these white people who just mistreated us. Another memory I have of when we would go, we was given these blue lunch cards. And that's when I realized that we was really poor because the white kids ate first because they brought their lunch. They had these little nice lunch boxes. And the kid in me still want a lunch box. I want my mom to pack a sandwich that we ain't got to eat lettuce, because that's some days so what we ate. We just ate lettuce. We ate pork and beans. So I just wanted my mom to pack a lunch and put it in a lunch box that has a superhero on it. But we was given these blue lunch cards. I remember being asked to take a lunch to the office because they had my nephew in the office. So when I get to the office, they had him in a cardboard box. They had cut a hole in it. And they asked me to hand him his tray in this cardboard box. And I never forgave myself for it because I never said anything about it. Because I didn't think my parents really cared. But I knew then that I got to stay out of trouble because I didn't want to end up in that cardboard box. Death was my first experience with dealing with white people. I carry so much, you know. I've been digging from up under stuff for so long, you know. My family stuff. I didn't know I had to do this kind of digging. It's just another layer. You know, I've taught my little kids. I went into my homes. I went around. I drove around. I took pictures of every house that we lived in, every place that we lived in. And I went in and I, during meditation, I visualized myself being pulled up from under my molesters and people that has molested me and from out of the bedrooms of the beatings, you know, out of the bathroom where the beatings and the tub where the beatings, you know, took place. So I've learned to take, you know, do that kind of visualization with my kids, through pictures, through photographs, you know, and that's what I've done. But I don't know how to deal with the racism piece. I don't know. So I use these photos that I share here tonight. You know, because I got to go back now into that community and pull them out of there. I got to go back and pull them up out of there. And I have to let them know that that was then and this is now, and that I am here. And I have them and I will protect them, and they do not have to fear being put in boxes. They don't have to fear not being able to go to the bathroom. They don't have to fear getting bottles and cans thrown at them. They don't have to fear. But you know, I don't even know. I don't even know because the times that we're living in, I don't even know. I don't even know. I don't know. But what I do know is that I am their loving parent. And I would do my best to speak up for them, speak their truth, and tell a story. And they deserve to be heard. And first it had to come from me, because first I had to get to a point that I even liked me, you know, because I hated me. I had to get to the point that I could just say I like me. But tonight I can sit here and I can say I love me. You know, I love all parts of me. I love the parts that I couldn't look at, you know, that I blame for being molested and didn't say anything. Yeah. And I tell my kids that they are worthy. They are worthy to be in spaces that I felt like I didn't belong. Because I used to make myself small. And that's another thing of living in that community, because in not being able to go outside of it, you make yourself small. In school, I made myself small. Yeah, I love being in my body. I love feeling my feelings. I can talk, I can trust. And I can feel. I can be who I am complete without shame, without guilt. Yeah. And I am going to redeem some of my time and give it back to you. Because I think that that's enough. It's enough. And I thank God for this space tonight, today, what I heard, what I experienced. And I don't know if you got anything from what I said or yeah. But I appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone that spoke tonight, that spoke up for themselves, that spoke up for their parts, for their children, you know. 'Cause like I said today, you know, and I know for minds that they deserve to be heard, they deserve to be felt. Yeah. And I allow them space in my now, in my present. Every day. I check in every day. I have conversations every day. Yeah. And for that, I am healing. I'm loved and I am recovering. And with that, I pass.